at Cruise Subaru.
Welcome back. Scott Hamilton Show on Tuesday. Joining us on the Saitama Hotline, ESPN's Tom Luganville. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, man. How are you doing?
Buddy, I'm up and at 'em, and I'm finally happy to have you on that I was able to not screw up the schedule.
Sorry, man. My schedule's so crazy right now. I'm starting to embark on one of them as we get midweek games now. So I'm starting to embark on having two games a week instead of one. So it limits my time. But, yeah, I'm glad we were able to make this work out.
Well, Tom, that actually brings me to one of my questions for you. You know, we've got a good Sun Belt game tonight, Appalachian State, Louisiana, 7:30 kickoff, ESPN2. The Mountaineers are 5-point favorites. And when we talk about the group of five, most of the chatter seems to focus on the American Conference. Or at least that's been the perception the last few years, thanks to the play of Central Florida, that it is the best group of five conference. But I'm wondering if that's a false perception in 2021, and if it is true, how wide or narrow is the gap between the American and the Sun Belt?
Well, I'll tell you, I do think that there is a fairly significant gap, maybe not top to bottom, but I think the other area that you've got to look at is the schedule of non-conference games. You know, Cincinnati has an advantage right now because they've played Indiana on the road and beat them. They've played Notre Dame on the road and beat them. And, you know, going into last week, we're going to consider group of five, or as we would label them, non-power five. BYU comes into the weekend ranked number 10 with three wins over, you know, three power five schools, and blows an opportunity at home by losing to Boise State. Because if you look at the schedule, when it's all said and done, BYU is going to have played six or seven power five teams. So they really would have been in the running, and now it all disappears. So I think the margin of error for a Coastal Carolina, I actually have Coastal and App State next week. It's going to be rocking up in Boone. The margin of error is so slim. You just can't afford to slip up. And I think in the Sun Belt Conference, those teams are so evenly matched top to bottom that if you don't bring your A game every week, everybody's at risk of going down.
Yeah, Tom, I've had my eye on BYU for some time. I felt like they should have been honorary members of the Pac-12. They have so many Pac-12 teams on their schedule. They're playing more conference games than it seems like some of the actual members of that conference. But you mentioned Cincinnati, and Cincinnati slayed that big dragon, beat Notre Dame. What's your gut tell you? Cincinnati wins out from here. Do you think they get in the playoff?
I still think there's so much that remains that could still have an impact on them. I look at the Big Ten, and I see Ohio State starting to hit their stride. 4 weeks ago, there were a lot of people questioning Ohio State, so now they're back in the equation. I still think Penn State's a good football. If Penn State doesn't lose Sean Clifford this last weekend, they win that game at Iowa. I've got Iowa-Purdue this week, and I've been spending the last 2 days watching that one, and losing Sean Clifford just killed Penn State, but I think if they get him back, they're still in the mix to either upset somebody or put themselves in position. We still don't know what's going to happen out of the Big 12. You know, you got Arizona State and Oregon in the Pac-12. And I think it's too premature to suggest that if Cincinnati runs the table, that they're automatically in. I still think the committee is going to place so much value on not only the week-in, week-out opponents, but, Scott, here's the thing, too, that I think it's glossed over. It's the venues you're playing in. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to knock the American, but if you're going and you're going to play in front of 25,000 at Navy, or you're playing in front of 18,000 at Tulsa, okay, or 22,000, 25,000 at SMU, that's not the same as going into the Big House, going into the Horseshoe, going into Baton Rouge or Auburn. Those are different environments, different atmospheres that can have an impact on a road team. And I think the committee places stock in that.
Tom, you mentioned Iowa, and I enjoy watching Iowa play. It's a real throwback, but I also get the sense, Tom, they're playing on borrowed time because of the style of football they play. It's opportunistic. They're all about field position. Goodness gracious, I think they're leading the country in punting. So what they're doing is they're giving their defenses opportunities to play with long fields. And here's another thing, Tom. They're intercepting 7% of all passes thrown their way. I just don't see how they can continue to keep up that pace. Do you agree with me that eventually this is going to flip, that it's going to turn against them?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so interesting you say that, because I know people are enamored with them right now, and you see the national ranking, but if you really peel back the layers and you watch them, as good as they've been on the defensive side of the football, they have been equally as poor on the offensive side of the football. And one of the reasons why they have been able to eke out games and wins is because of the turnovers they've put their offense on a short field. So at minimum, they're coming away with a field goal, okay? Or sometimes they're coming away with a touchdown. But you look at them, and I'm not a huge statistics guy, but they're in the bottom three of the Big Ten in just about every offensive category, just about every one. But when you've created 20 turnovers and you're putting your team on a short field all the time, you're taking away opportunities from the opposing offense, then you give yourself a chance to win. You're tough, you're disciplined, you play hard. They're a nasty unit on defense, so they're going to stay in every game. But I tend to agree with you, and I don't know if it will be this week versus Purdue or if it will be 3 weeks down the road or 2 weeks down the road, but creating four turnovers on average a game is not sustainable. And I understand that every now and then you have one of those deals where you have one of those years where everything just pans out. It just goes your way from a turnover perspective. And I think Iowa's having one of those years. Can they do it for 15 straight weeks, though, will be the question.
Joined by Tom Luganbill, ESPN. Follow him on Twitter, at Tom Luganbill. And, Tom, think about this for a moment. This blows my mind. Has Lincoln Riley ever had to seriously consider a midseason quarterback change as the head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners? He had Baker Mayfield, he had Kyler Murray, he had Jalen Hurts, and now he's not even saying if he's going to publicly declare a starter. Tom, do you think right now on Tuesday that he knows who's going to be taking snaps against TCU?
I think he knows what he wants to do. I think he's in a situation, and you kind of referenced it, that he hasn't been in before, because here's what he's got to be very, very careful of. I think with his dealings with Spencer Rattler, he's going to have to sit that young man down and say, hey, listen, here's the deal. Here's what we're doing. If you can't handle being in this role, I can't have you here. You're going to have to be a team guy. This can't be about you and your draft stock. We haven't played to the level we've been expected to play. You individually have not performed to the level that we've needed you to play, and that's why we had to make a change the other day. So we're going to let you battle this thing out this week, but whatever decision we make, if you're going to be here, I need you to be a team guy. I need you to be a part of the Oklahoma Sooners, not a part of Spencer Rattler, not worrying about NIL, not worrying about individualism and preparing for the NFL draft. The question is, can Spencer Rattler handle that role? And if he can't, then you can't have him be in your locker room because he's going to destroy it. And I think those are tough conversations that have to be had this week. I would be willing to bet that they're going to battle it out for outward appearances, but he probably has a pretty good feel for what direction he's going to go. And listen, what happened last Saturday was not something that popped up on Saturday. If you've watched Oklahoma, that was brewing. I had him week one. Spencer Rattler did not play well. The offensive line has not played well. They haven't been able to effectively run the football. And then all of a sudden, they run the football last week well, and now the quarterback doesn't play good. So, you know, Spencer Rattler's got to take some ownership of that.
And Tom, before we let you go, you mentioned level of play with the quarterback position at Oklahoma. But I've noticed this, and you've addressed it some, and I'd like to dig a little deeper if we can. Offensive line play, spotty this year, even at places like Alabama. And I'm just trying to wrap my mind, I wish I had more than one mind, around why. I mean, well, think about it, Tom. Physical maturity means so much in college football, specifically at the line, offensive line and defensive line. There's a reason you can't go from high school to the NFL. You have to get bigger, faster, stronger, mature physically. And it would seem to me, Tom, that during the COVID stuff, when teams were restricted, couldn't really do a lot, the world was restricted, that players would be working out and eating, getting bigger, faster, stronger. That line play should be above par this year, but it's been really, really spotty across the board. Well, what's your take?
You know, it has been spotty. It's almost like an epidemic. And I don't really know if I have an answer as to why. And I can tell you I've seen it just about every weekend, everywhere we've gone, everybody we've seen. Cincinnati's had some issues in the offensive line. Boise State last week has been very, very poor in the offensive line. It's been one of those situations where you kind of start to look at some teams that may have some super seniors, they have some redshirt juniors and redshirt seniors that have played a lot of football, and they seem to be the teams that are the most productive right now in the offensive line, which would make sense. That's not Alabama this year. You know, Alabama's playing with some unknown quantities, a lot of youth in their two deep, haven't been able to settle in on a right tackle. Chris Owens is a center guard playing right tackle. He's out of position. So they're not immune to it either. It's one of those deals where you just kind of scratch your head and you say, is this going to be one of those years where your quarterback in many ways is going to hopefully be good enough to compensate for a little bit of that? Look at North Carolina. Sam Howell has just been beat to a pulp because they can't protect him. And so, you know, it's one of them. Clemson's another one, another great example. If you watch them, how poor they are in the offensive line. There are very few teams I'm watching in college football right now that are dominant in the offensive line.
He's Tom Luganbill, VSPN. You can follow him on Twitter, at Tom Luganbill. Tommy, buddy, again, I'm sorry for all the mix-ups we've had connecting. I appreciate you coming on.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me. Look forward to it again.
All righty, buddy. It's Tom Luganbill of ESPN joining us on the Saitama Hotline.